Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Fundamentals Podcast. I am your host, Harley. Joining me on this episode to talk about one of the most iconic sitcoms of all time, that is, of course, Seinfeld, it's my guest, the host of the Caged in Coppola Connections podcast, Petros Patsilivas. Petros was kind enough to give me some of his time to explain his deep love for Seinfeld. We talk about the characters, the setup, the impact that it's had on the comedy really since its time, and so much more. We even get into discussions around sort of comedy and censorship and how this show in many ways changed the game and the formula for what was becoming perhaps a bit of a bog standard approach to writing sitcoms. It was a really eye-opening conversation, and of course I've spliced in some clips here and there with Petros guiding me to some of the more iconic and hilarious moments of the show. And it's a show that I think I will definitely be checking out after this conversation, and I hope this inspires you to do the same. So, without further ado, let's get straight into the conversation. This is Seinfeld with Petros Patsilivas. Hello, Petros, and welcome to the Fundamentals Podcast.
Hello, Harley. Thank you so much for having me. I'm always thrilled at the chance to talk about things that I'm fanatical about, and well, the thing we're going to talk about today, I bloody love it.
Brilliant. That's what you like to hear here. And yes, so you've brought an absolute all-time classic sitcom to our sitcom summer series, and that is Seinfeld. So yes. I've said this to you before we start recording, and I must confess to my listeners, I've never seen Seinfeld. This is on my list. I believe it's on Prime at the minute. So it's one of those where, like, I'm definitely going to start watching this. But I'm all ears, obviously, to learn everything about it. So I just want to know, yeah, when did you first see it and why did you bring it to the show?
So I would have first seen it, I would have maybe been like 18 years old.
Okay.
I'd always heard about it because I remember, like, a family friend of ours used to have like the DVD box sets. And obviously anyone who's seen that logo, it's quite like, it's quite striking, like that kind of yellow with like the red writing.
Yeah.
Like, It looks archetypally 90s as well. I just kind of like remember seeing that and some of the covers of just like this weird group of friends. Like, because I guess you had like Friends, which is like this kind of pristine looking group of friends, whereas like Seinfeld, it's like they're an odd looking bunch. Like they almost look as neurotic as like the show is itself.
Okay.
So, yeah, I kind of, when I was 18, a friend of mine was like, I'd watched Curb. Weirdly, I'd watched like the kind of, what is the spiritual sequel before I'd even watched Seinfeld. And so I'm like, what, you've watched Curb Your Enthusiasm without watching Seinfeld? And I kind of, yeah, at like kind of age of 18, went back. And then,
yeah,
that's like, yeah, 12 years ago for me now. So
brilliant. Yes. Brilliant, man. I mean, it's quite a lot for you to work through. I'm reading here it's 172 episodes for over 11 years, it looks like. I mean, that's a lot of work to get through, but I imagine you just absolutely lapped it up then.
Well, I remember like the friend of mine, what he did was he did it on like a kind of like return rental basis. So like he gave me kind of, he gave me like seasons 1 to 3, because from my memory, season 1 is like 5 episodes and then it's like 12 episodes, and then it's very weird. I guess it's down to like they took a little punt on them the first time, and then like the seasons get, it eventually gets to your classic like sitcom 24 episodes a season, like that kind of American format.
Okay.
But like, yeah, he let me like the season 1 to 3 box set, and then when I was done with that, it was, here's season 4, here's season 5. But like every time I return them, and it's just so easy as well, because it's what, it's like 22 minute episodes as well. So it is that classic sitcom format of just like 22 minutes, like what, yeah, it would have been half hour with ad breaks. Like I've been watching them on all 4 recently, even like just because my DVDs are up in the loft and like on all 4, it still gives you adverts. So it's like, it's still half, yeah, it's half hours worth of TV.
I know, man.
Yeah, There's a lot of episodes. I guess one of them doesn't really count because, like, the 100th episode, from my memory, is just like a greatest hits highlights reel of the first 100 episodes.
Okay. Right. Interesting.
So it's, yeah, so it's very much like, it's got like Jerry Seinfeld, like, out of character being like, hey, do you remember that time that we did this? And then, like, it kind of goes back, like, they're all, the clips are all, like, vaguely linked by, like,
right,
yeah, like, do you know what I mean? Like, a topic or something like that. So, yes, that one doesn't count.
I know. It's yeah, a few sort of shows do that. And, and I think now, in particular, because we live in a kind of a streaming culture, so it's... yeah, I find I often skip those episodes when I'm rewatching a series, and like they have, hey, here's the recap episode. Like, nope, I've literally just watched all of this. Like, I'm not doing it.
So I guess it's that thing, like, Seinfeld maybe will break out once again, because I know that, like, there is speculation. There was a deal done with Netflix. Uh-huh. Like, Netflix paid, like, because it's one of those shows. I guess it's like, it's on the same par as Friends in that, like, kind of it makes serious bank in, like, syndication. And, yes, like, Jerry Seinfeld, I think, has, like, 15 Ferraris off the back end. Like, Jerry Seinfeld syndication and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's but, like, yeah, like, they paid an obscene amount to put it on Netflix. Mm. But, like, it said 2021, and I remember, like, New Year's Eve being excited. I was like, New Year's Day, I could be hungover and I could watch Seinfeld, and it hasn't happened. I guess it's like a really boring rights thing at the moment that it will happen at some point this year. We will, like, and it will make it a lot easier for people to watch it, I guess.
Yeah, you just said that. I've just quickly Googled that, and it says, yeah, currently it's not available. It's supposed to be. It's still being vague. It just says sometime this year. Like I said, I've seen it. I've seen it on Prime, so it's still there. Oh, here we go. It says June 2021. Apparently, it's so. Who knows? Who knows? By the time this comes out, people might be thinking, hey, "What are you on about? It's on Netflix."
Yeah, and you'll be elbows deep into Seinfeld. It's a weird phrase to say, but I don't really know. Like, that's kind of like. Well, it's famously, it's the show about nothing.
Yeah.
Like, and that is like, and like Larry David always had this mantra for the show, which was no hugging, no learning. So I guess like in some degree, there's no moral, there's no like kind of moral story that anyone learns. If anything, throughout the seasons, they get progressively worse as people.
Really?
But like, and it's kind of like, I guess a show like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
That literally just came into my head. Yeah, yeah.
Has taken that and like run with it to like the nth degree. It's like, it's not those levels of it, but like, it's just like really petty things. So you have Jason Alexander's character, George, who for all intents and purposes is just a cipher for Larry David, the show's co-creator, Jerry.
Okay.
And he just gets like progressively worse. Like, there is a kind of a season arc where he's like engaged to a woman and he's kind of like he wants to back out of it, and the payoff to that season is through his kind of like tight-fistedness and like unwillingness basically to want to get married, he like cheaps out on the envelopes for the wedding invitations,
right?
And she dies. Like, she dies because it's like toxic glue. It's this massive spoiler at first. Like, she dies, and like the season ends basically with him like doing like a kind of like little like fist bump to it, because it's like, I've managed to get rid of my like responsibilities and like that kind of call off the engagement without actually having to be an asshole. And that's the thing. I say that and I'm like, you should really watch it. It's really funny. And like, that's probably the worst like example to give, but it's it's perfectly done in a show that kind of, I guess, like, looking back, it's one of the first shows I time wise, like when it came out, that did like the kind of multi-strand plot lines that kind of pay off at the end. And a perfect example for this is there is an episode called The Marine Biologist.
Right.
So like all the episodes on Seinfeld as well, you know, like Friends have like, it's called like the one that this happens. Like Seinfeld is all called the something. So there's The Marine Biologist, where George Costanza lies to someone he used to go to school with, like, and he says, "Oh yeah, I've become a marine biologist," whilst at the same time, Jerry's wacky neighbor Kramer, I guess, like, if you haven't, the guy with like the wild hair is kind of always like the slapstick guy. He like finds this golfing spot by the water and it's kind of just, he just goes out there to pitch, like, to just smack golf balls into the ocean. Right. And then it kind of like the culmination of the episode pays off in just this like beautiful scene where it turns out George was on a date with this woman, like walking along the beach.
Yeah.
And someone's like, you see this like, group of people. It's like, "Oh my God, there's a whale. Is anyone a marine biologist?" So obviously like through his lies, he has to pretend to be a marine biologist. And then like, he's like recounting this story. And that, I think this is what the show does really well. It's like, it's written so perfectly that like it can have characters telling stories, but they're just like, there's these beautifully written monologues, like there's just the lines in it, like in this particular one, Jason Alexander gets like this, he's just beautiful turns of phrases, like he's like talking about, he's like, "The sea was angry that day, my friend," and he's like, "Then I reached into the blowhole and there was an obstruction and I pulled it out and it was this," and he pulls out a golf ball and it's just like this kind of like amazing like tension that's built up throughout the monologue, and the kind of like relief it's proper like chef's kiss moment.
"George, I've just been reading this thing in the paper. It's unbelievable."
"I know, I was just telling the story."
"Well, come on, George, finish the story."
"The sea was angry that day, my friends." "Like an old man trying to send back soup in a deli." "I got about 50 feet out, and suddenly, the great beast appeared before me. I tell you, he was 10 stories high if he was a foot. As if sensing my presence, he let out a great bellow. I said, 'Easy, big fella.' And then, as I watched him struggling, I realized that something was obstructing its breathing. From where I was standing, I could see directly into the eye of the great fish."
"Mammal."
"Whatever."
"What did you do next?"
"Well, then, from out of nowhere, a huge tidal wave lifted me, tossed me like a cork, and I found myself right on top of him, face to face with the blowhole. I could barely see from the waves crashing down upon me, but I knew something was there. So I reached my hand in, felt around, and pulled out the obstruction.
And they do that like throughout like seasons. So like season four is like groundbreaking television for when it came out, because the whole season is about George and Jerry writing a sitcom called Jerry, which I guess like is really meta, because it is basically Larry and Jerry writing a sitcom. Because the whole premise, and I guess if for yourself and people who haven't watched it, it's just basically, it's about Jerry Seinfeld, a fictional version of Jerry Seinfeld, living in New York and kind of the escapades he gets up with his best friend, George Costanza, his ex-girlfriend, Elaine Benes, who isn't in the first episode. And it's one of those things of like, obviously it was a production note that like, you need a woman in this. And it's like, one of the best things that ever happened to that show, because like Elaine Benes, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is like, and obviously she's gone on to be
She's amazing and everything she's
like
in
Veep, like now she's gonna be, I remember when I found out she's in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I was like, yes, like for me, like if any of these guys are in anything now, it's just like, it's like a weird like victory. I'm very like, I don't, weirdly territorial about like my little gang. And Michael Richards, like I'm kind of 50-50 on, because he's done some shady stuff, but we won't talk about that. okay. But yeah, like it's just the show is just like, I think it's very hard to explain. Like it is that thing, and I guess I listened to your episode with Claire.
Oh yeah.
About Parks and Rec, and this has got that same thing as that, and I guess it's like a thing with all sitcoms of like, the first season, it's not that good.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And again, I feel like that's part of almost any television show. You know, for, I wouldn't say any, but most TV shows have that problem, whether it's comedies or not. But yeah, comedies especially struggle with this. And it makes sense because, like I said in that episode, that they're figuring out the characters, they're figuring out the direction, and you don't know what's going to land with an audience until you put it out there. So it makes total sense that, you throw some stuff out, and then the second or third and fourth, as you're going along, you're like, right, this is the stuff people respond to. Let's just write more of this and make the characters do more of this. So that's fine. Mm-hmm. And I'm always happy to go through a season one and just look for the good stuff and never mind that. I just think, it will get better. You know, I don't worry about it.
Well, at least the, like, as I said, the first season of this is 5 episodes, so it's not really too much like struggling to get through it.
Exactly.
And like, it's obviously, it's got its like teething problems, stuff like that. And I guess like looking on the show in like retrospect, it suffers from them same things that a lot of kind of 90s sitcoms suffer from, like representation isn't great. Do you know what I mean? Like you kind of look back at Friends as well and just go, God, there's like, there's no real people of color and stuff like that. But like, to the point of like the show in general, there's an amazing like quote from Jason Alexander when Jerry Seinfeld asked him, like, do you think this show will be a success? And he's like, no, of course not. Like, Jerry's why? He's like, because the audience for this show is me and I don't watch TV. Like, and it's very peculiar. And it's almost amazing. So kind of like look back at it and especially watching that first season, I'm like, somebody at NBC must have really like just loved the idea and seen potential in it. And the fact that it's just had this like life unto its own of like what it managed to like create and like what it managed to like I don't know, the people that have come out of it and like the careers it's so obviously wouldn't have Curb Your Enthusiasm like Larry David or even like the director of Borat is like one of like the we used to be a writer on Seinfeld, Larry Charles and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so like, there's all these people who have done stuff on it.
That's really cool. I'm just scrolling through the cast and seeing like all the guest stars who've been on it. And like, to be fair, it's like, it's a really good roster of people that have popped up. Quite a few names I'm just recognizing, and even like little cameos. I just clocked Bryan Cranston as one of my absolute favorite actors of all time. I was like, he's in 5 episodes. And who else is on here? Someone else. Jerry Stiller, of course, the absolute comedy legend that he was, you know.
Jerry Stiller is like perfect in this show. And there's like amazing like stories about him and his delivery on the show. He always sounds like he's like stumbling on his words. And they said like that was because he was quite bad at memorizing, but it just made for this very unique performance he does as Frank Costanza, George's dad, and him and Estelle Harris, who voices Miss Potato Head in the Toy Story
movies.
So that very shrill voice, so those two together are absolute comedy gold. And like, there's just like, the thing is, I could sit here and it could very much be me going, there's this episode, there's that episode, but like I kind of don't want to do that, because like, there's, for one, I would love for you to like somebody who hasn't seen it to experience them for the first time.
No, it's fine. I mean, I was going to say that the thing, something you touched upon earlier, which I would love to kind of pull on this thread a bit more, is this idea of a comedy that sits more in characters that don't learn lessons. As you mentioned, Always Sunny is one that's recently, you know, grabbed a lot of people's attention. And, you know, I went through that show and it fascinated me because for that reason, I'm so used to shows like Parks and Rec, like The Office or US Office, I should say. The UK one has a bit of this. But, you know, there's a lot of more optimistic kind of shows. And there's a few coming up on this series, where, you know, the people progressively get better and they learn lessons and all of that good stuff. So it's really fascinating when you watch a show that just goes in the opposite direction, where, like, best case scenario, status quo is maintained, you know, and that's your best case scenario. And there's something really, I think, hilarious in that. And just really, I think, interesting from a writing perspective, that people take that gambit. Well, I mean, what do you think it sort of says about you if you respond to something like that?
I don't know. I guess it is that thing that, like, not that I relate to these characters.
No, that's it. Yeah.
It's just the thing of, like, and it is that thing that they always manage to hit, like, a status quo again. Because, like, one of the recurring things that happens throughout Seinfeld is that, like, Jerry will have, like, a different girlfriend all the time and stuff like that. But then, right, like, some of the fun that the show takes of it is, like, the reasons why they split up or something like that. It will be, like, something, like, really minute like that. And there's kind of a lot of weird phrases that have come out of the show because of it. And there's, like, the characters will say something and it will be, like, that's a part of their lexicon. And as the audience, we're like, I guess that is a thing. Like, there's, for instance, there's a time when Jerry, like, starts dating a woman. And in certain lighting, like, she looks really attractive, and then in other lighting she doesn't. And then, like, right, he tells George about it, goes, "Oh, she's a two-face."
Oh,
like, and it's like, she's a two-face. Yeah, that happens. And but then, yeah, and then loads of stuff, like, just mishaps and confusion spiral out of things like that. And again, that's probably a really bad example because it makes them sound like they're really, and I guess they are, like, yeah, they they are bad people, but they are very entertaining to watch. Like,
I think that's probably it, though, isn't it? There's some entertainment value in, as you say, you're not relating to them, but you're watching it, and you're kind of just like, these people are awful, and you're just kind of enjoying watching them have to squirm out of certain situations that they've put themselves in.
I guess an element of it as well is that kind of, like, daydream logic of, like, you know, like, the worst part of yourself.
Yeah.
In a certain, it's like, yeah, like, and I guess, like, Larry David really ran with it when he went on to do Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right.
It's like, he, that show very much acts on that thing of, like, and Seinfeld to a lesser degree, that thing of, like, oh, I wish I had, like, the, do you know what I mean, the chutzpah to do that in that situation, or, do you know what I mean, like just those kind of passing thoughts that go through your mind, and then, like, you never do them and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's almost like exercising demons in a way, isn't it? Like, you're looking at it and you're going, oh, I could have said this in this situation or behave, and then you watch someone else in the series do the thing and you go, actually, I'm glad I didn't do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so like tightly written. I watched an episode, like, a couple of episodes today in, like, preparation, and I kind of reached out on Twitter and said to people, like, yeah, what are your favorite episodes? Just to kind of, like, jog my memory of some of the big ones. And there's one called The Chinese Restaurant, which is, like, a bottle episode. And I wholly find those episodes funny, like, great in sitcoms or TV shows. Just kind of like that one location. And this is, like, in real time, the, like, three of the characters. So, yeah. So Jerry, George and Elaine waiting for a table at a Chinese restaurant.
Right.
And then George is, like, trying to, you don't know at the beginning why, but, like, he's waiting for, like, his girlfriend that he's seeing, and he's like, he needs to use the payphone, and then, like, he gets into spats with people and like kind of keeps going like, and it spawned like, yeah, like a big, because he exclaims at one point, like, because this guy's on the phone, he's like, don't people get it? We're living in a society. We're supposed to be civilized people. And like, obviously got parodied when the trailer for Zack Snyder's Justice League.
I've heard that so much recently. I was wondering where that came from. There you go.
So like, you have that, but then like, they obviously plant a seed that he's like saying how rude people are. They don't care about their fellow man.
Yeah.
And then, like, later on in the episode, like, the guy who was on the phone, like, comes up to George and is like, oh, sorry for taking so long on the phone. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. And then you just get that thing of, like, what, you're a weasel. Yeah. You're a weasel, George.
Yeah.
Hey, excuse me, I was waiting here.
Where? I didn't see you.
I've been standing here for the last 10 minutes.
I won't be long.
That's not the point. The point is, I was here first.
Well, if you were here first, you'd be holding the phone.
You know, we're living in a society. We're supposed to act in a civilized way. Does she care? No. Does anyone ever display the slightest sensitivity over the problems of a fellow individual? No. No. A resounding no.
Hey, sorry I took so long.
Oh, that's okay, really. Don't worry.
As I said, the whole episode, it plays out in real time. And it's like that thing of like, they got the pressure cooker because it's like they're going to see Plan 9 from outer space at the movie theater. Mm. So they have a time limit on how long they can be there. And just like, it's just refreshing to see like, I guess it's one of the most grounded episodes, and it's a fairly grounded show. It gets a lot more kind of like wild and out there as like just things that wouldn't happen. But I just find it like so great to see how they kind of like, it's just really perfectly crafted jokes. And I guess like anyone who knows Jerry Seinfeld's stand up will know that he kind of, that is what he does. Like, there's no fat on a Jerry Seinfeld joke, and he's the kind of like, he's the guy who does, hey, what's the deal with plain food? Like, but like, he nails it. They're like perfect observations, and that's what this show does. It's like, this is like, they're setups and payoffs throughout everything. And as I said, like season four, for me, like there is a case that like when you watch the season four finale, you almost think like, they could have ended there because it wraps it up all in a neat bow, like, and kind of like does callbacks not only to that episode but to the whole season before it,
right?
And then like like characters, because it is about this idea of them writing a sitcom that is basically the sitcom you're watching, is that there's it. And that's the thing, there's like
that.
References.
I enjoy that a lot.
There's references to like think stuff. It's like, I'm just going to write it about my own life. Mm. So then there's like, whilst they're like writing the sitcom or like doing auditions, you're seeing like a casting room of like, so like Jeremy Piven's in it as like for two episodes, because he plays an actor who auditions and gets the role to play George in the pilot of a sitcom.
Right.
And the actor who plays Mr. Is it Mr. Heckles, the downstairs neighbor in Friends?
Oh yeah.
He gets the role of Kramer in the sitcom and stuff like that. But then like when they air, when they air the sitcom on TV, you kind of get these like, everyone who's kind of cropped up in that season, or pretty like loads of people have cropped up in seasons before or episodes before, all of a sudden it's cutting to them watching the pilot. So they're going like, and obviously as an audience, you're going like, I know the run-in that Jerry had with Terry Hatcher's character from that episode.
Right.
And then like, they might be with a part, and like, so the woman who plays Daphne from Frasier, there's like, she's in an episode called The Virgin, and like there's a whole I can't remember it fully, so I'm not going to like talk about it. But like, she ends up with John F. Kennedy Jr. Right. And then like the payoff in that episode is, then the thing is, they have like real life people like that, but they very cleverly do it so like that you never see their face. You just have someone doing like a kind of a reasonable, do you know what I mean, impression of them. Mm. And then so that payoff is like him going like, oh, didn't you used to date that Jerry Seinfeld guy? I've heard he's pretty funny. And she's like, oh, can we turn it off? Because obviously her experience with him is that Jerry is a
lord of the manor.
Her not so good experience with him. That's pretty good. I like signs of this. I mean, I enjoy a show that goes meta, one that is coming up on this series later on. Like, I'm currently rewatching his Community, and that's obviously a show that is entirely self-referential. Yeah. So I enjoy that. I enjoy a show that kind of does a little wink and a nod. And I was going to ask you, and you've kind of really gone into this already, but I'm really grateful for it, the whole idea that this is based on a comedian telling stories about his life, I think is actually a really good idea for a sitcom, because anyone who's had the pleasure of watching a stand-up comedian do what they do, be it, you know, live or on the telly, they're master storytellers, you know, I'm sure we've all been there. We've been sat there watching and you thinking like, they must be exaggerating elements of this, or they must be like, you know, and it's, of course, it's what you do. You cherry pick things and escalate it. And so to take that and then turn it into 20-minute episodes of a sitcom on paper, I think is genius. And it doesn't surprise me that they went and did it with somebody who, in my understanding of Jerry Seinfeld, particularly in the sort of the late 80s, early 90s, he was kind of like the height of his comedic power. So it's like, of course you would do that. Of course you would just base it off of him. So I get why this show got made, and it sounds really like it worked for the most part.
Oh yeah, so obviously it ran for 9 seasons. They left on their own terms. Like, I think it was something crazy. Like, Jerry Seinfeld would have made $110 million for a 10th season. Whoa. Like, if he had done it, but said like, I don't want to do it. Like, I've like, do you know what I mean? There's no juice left in the tank. And it kind of, it has that thing that like the finale is wholly like, this, do you know what I mean? It's not great. It's not a great finale.
Okay.
Like, it's so hard to like, to kind of do like a satisfying like finale for it. It's good enough, do you know what I mean? I like, a lot of people hate it. I quite enjoy it. Okay. And then like, but then it's that thing of like, because they've been like vehement that they will never, that they'll be
never gonna happen.
You won't see them on a sofa with James Corden. Like, the closest we ever got to it is like, that's the like thing, and it's talking about meta. There is a season of season 8 of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is all about Larry David getting the cast of Seinfeld back together for a reunion episode.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So then it's all of them playing themselves, prepping for a reunion episode.
Right.
And you kind of get the like what they would have done, but like, you also like, you get to see them back in Jerry's apartment, you get to see them like at the kind of the coffee shop that they always sit at. And like, that's the thing, like, looking back on Seinfeld, you kind of like, if, and that's the thing, I always love to look at things in the kind of the context of when they were made and their kind of the footprint they left. And like, so obviously, like, you look at Seinfeld, they always sit at the same booth in the coffee shop. And then you look at How I Met Your Mother, it's like that's where they got it from.
Yeah.
Tendrils throughout sitcoms. And like, for me, like, and this, like, people listening might be like, that isn't the case, like, it was before this. But like, I think very much for like the kind of sitcoms as we know it today, because this predates Friends by a few years as well.
Yes, it does. Like, yeah, Friends was 94. Yeah.
Yeah, so like, I think like this is very much like the template for like modern sitcoms.
Absolutely. And, like, absolutely.
Put, like, pushed the envelope in regards to what you could get away with at kind of like prime time entertainment and stuff like that. Like, goes into some places where whether it's like, I don't know, things of like to do with, yeah, like raciness and stuff. There's a really famous episode that I'm sure people who are listening would have seen, or even people who haven't seen it are kind of there's an episode called The Contest, which is basically the whole premise of it is, can the four characters, and again, this is like, this is pretty progressive for like the early 90s, is to see if like how long they can go without, like, and I'll do it in the way they do it, because obviously they don't say what it is. Like, how long can you go without like shaking hands with yourself? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they,
right.
And like, that is the whole premise for an episode, and it's kind of progressive, because obviously they're not just talking about like three guys doing it. There's a woman involved in that contest as well.
Yeah, so it's pretty. Like, yeah, because I just, when I was skimming past it, it's a PG, so that's primetime PG TV. That's pretty racy stuff. Yeah, interesting.
And but like the way they, and I guess it's that thing of like,
it's innuendo, isn't it? It's going to go over kids' heads. Yeah.
But it's a perfect thing for like creating this great comedy that Seinfeld is those limitations. I guess like if it was kind of like if it came out today, it would probably be, well, case in point is Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, sure.
It's an 18. Is that what you mean? It's no hold bars, effing and jeffing all over the place.
Right.
Whereas like Seinfeld, within its limitations, like, just made everybody who worked on it be wholly more inventive and creative with the way they kind of tell stories and turn of phrases. And there's just amazing thing. Like, and yeah, and if you buy the DVDs, it's like great, like retrospective interviews with people, and they kind of like, they give you ideas of like certain things are cherry picked, not just from Jerry's life, but like the writers and like Larry David, or just people would be like, this happened to me once, and it'll be like, well, we'll put it in the show. And then like, just to kind of like this weird tapestry of like people's mishaps and failings in life managed to create this amazing tapestry. And you mentioned Bryan Cranston, like his character, 5 episodes, but he steals the show on like every episode.
Doesn't
like,
surprise me.
And that's the thing. Like, once you watch Seinfeld, there's like a whole like weird lexicon to it. Like, I think it's his character who gets labeled a regifter. So, or like he coins the term because he buys a label maker baby junior for someone, and then they gift it to somebody else, and he finds out about it. So he's, oh, you're a re-gifter.
Hey.
Oh, is that a label maker?
Yes, it is. I got it as a gift. It's a label baby junior.
Love the label baby. You know, those things make great gifts. I just got one of those for Tim Watley for Christmas.
Tim Watley?
Yeah. Who sent you that one?
One Tim Watley.
No, my Tim Watley?
The same. He sent it as a thank you for my Super Bowl tickets.
I think this is the same one I gave him. He recycled this gift. He's a re-gifter.
Or maybe he liked your gift so much he decided to get me the same thing. Perhaps it's an homage.
Yeah, perhaps.
Well, how did he react when you gave it to him?
He said, oh, a label maker. How about that?
He repeated the name of the gift?
Yeah, so?
Oh, well, if you repeat the name of the gift, you can't possibly like it.
What do you mean?
Oh, you know, like when someone opens something up and they go, oh, tube socks. What are you going to do about it?
I don't know. I guess I'll just get invited up to his apartment and see if he's got a label maker.
Why'd you get him a gift anyway?
Oh, he did some dental work for me. And he didn't charge me, so I thought I'd get him a Christmas present.
Yeah, well, if you're getting him anything for his birthday, I'm a large.
And then they'll throw that out, and then like something like that will. Yeah. That's the thing, like, so clever. Like, there's an episode where Jerry agrees to wear a pirate shirt, like a puffy shirt, on a like a TV program, you know, like a Tonight Show or something like that, like doing stand-up. And that is all because the one of the women that Kramer is dating is a low talker, so she talks very quietly.
Right.
That's and then he agrees to it, and then it coins this phrase, like he comes out in the shirt and he's like, well, you agreed to wear it, so you got to wear it. And he's like, so you look like a pirate. And Jerry goes like, I don't want to be a pirate.
This pirate trend that she's come up with, Jerry, this is going to be the new look for the 90s. You're going to be the first pirate.
But I don't want to be a pirate.
And then like it will be like a whole season or two later.
Yeah.
Like Jerry, I think, goes to take his shoes to this mom and pop store to get them cleaned. And then it turns out that like all his trainers get robbed.
Mm.
And then all he's got left is cowboy boots that he got paid for when he like did a gig in Texas. And then like okay. That joke is brought back up again because like the same character says like, oh yeah, they look great. You look like a cowboy. And then it's, I don't want to be a cowboy. And it's,
oh, I can't wear these. They look ridiculous. You look like a cowboy, huh? I don't want to be a cowboy.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And like...
Nice.
Yeah, there's... Okay. I think it's... Steven Spielberg said that like he watched loads of Seinfeld when he was directing Schindler's List, because obviously like that film was so like heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the evenings he needed to watch tapes of that.
Makes sense.
And that, and this again goes back to that meta thing we were talking about, is there is then an episode of Seinfeld where Jerry is caught making out during Schindler's List. And obviously as a Jewish character, it then has like has repercussions throughout it. Stuff like that. It's just perfect. They obviously like they're super aware of the kind of cultural impact the show has had and the kind of
That's amazing. I mean, to be honest, that's something we've covered on quite a few of these episodes already. It's the cultural impact that these shows have. And I want to go back a little bit to what you just said a minute ago about this kind of paving the way for a new structure, because that is something I've noticed more and more. And again, it comes up with other episodes we've talked about. It feels like, you'll get a show that comes along and just kind of changes the game. And then afterwards, it'll be like, okay, that's the style of what sitcoms are going to be for the next decade. And then something else will come along and be like, okay, now this is the style. So case in point, you're right. Yeah, Seinfeld is, well, it's people in New York getting up to escapades. So what do we get after that? Well, Friends shortly afterwards. And those two kind of go so big that just becomes a thing for a while. And it makes me think of, you mentioned earlier, How I Met Your Mother sprang to my head, because I was thinking, that's a very similar skeleton of, it's a story of a man meeting his wife, a very long story albeit, but at the core of it, it's just people running around in New York getting up to various misgivings, you know, and then a few years later you get The Office and suddenly it's like, oh, we're doing candid camera kind of shows and we're little talking heads, and then that goes away, and then it's like, and it just keeps, everything just keeps changing format. So I'm fascinated by the show, and the more you talk about it, the more I'm like, I need to just start watching this. I think it just sounds right up my street.
Even if you look back to The Office, because I think like Ricky Gervais, like, so obviously going back to the original one, so
yes, the UK one, there will be an episode on the UK one,
but like Ricky Gervais did like a series where like he kind of interviewed his like comedy heroes, and one of them is Larry David. Mm. So you like, and I think it's more so you can see it in extras, like some of that like feels like it's lifted straight from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right.
I think like that kind of like, without that big influence of like Larry David and Seinfeld, I don't know if The Office would have been the thing it is. And I'm not to say like they hold all the debt is to that, and I guess like some of it is to Christopher Guest, like, and his like comedies, whether it's This Is Spinal Tap or
one of my favorites,
Best in Show, and stuff like that. So obviously like that's where like it kind of feels like he's taken that thing of like, let's let people kind of be their own demise, as it were. Because David Brent is very much that thing of like, you're watching, do you know what I mean? You're watching a man squirm, or it can make you squirm watching him kind of like make every bad decision. And it's like, he's kind of like a British version of a George Costanza.
Right.
Just a bit more grounded, where it's like George Costanza is like really neurotic and like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? He sees like a blemish on his face and he thinks he's got cancer or something crazy like that.
Right.
He's like up to the nth degree, or as I said, like he's lying and then has to pretend to be a marine biologist. Like Brent ain't doing that.
No.
At the same time, like you can, I'd just love to see the lineage to shows like that. But I think, the American Office very much like, well, the UK Office, I'd say more than anything, very much like set a, was like a refresh on it.
Well, that's it.
The shows that came out of that.
That's it. I mean, I think Gervais is sort of, again, the UK Office is coming up actually as an episode. But it's fine. Again, we there's loads of crossover in all the episodes I'm talking about, because these shows all influence each other. And I think he kind of said at the time when he was right, I don't know, have the exact quotes, but I remember hearing an interview talk about The Office and the idea behind it, because he just wanted to be different. He wanted to kind of stand out from what by this point was kind of, you know, the mundane, like, you know, like Seinfeld and Friends, like everyone was doing a ripoff of that show. And in a way, it's how the US Office as well. I've been listening to a lot of behind the scenes of that. It's kind of what helped get that off the ground a bit, because by that point it was like, yeah, everyone's trying to do Seinfeld and Friends. Everyone's trying to do that. You know, funny people in New York running around doing stuff, which is fine, but it became oversaturated. And this is what happens is, you get a style that sticks. And of course, lots of companies will then go, quick, we need our version of this. And then comedy, but then comedy moves on, because people just think, well, I'm sick of seeing this, and something else comes along and, you know, and then the scene changes again.
I think the thing that really works with sitcoms in general is people writing about what they know. Like, and obviously, like, Jerry Seinfeld writing about, like, being a neurotic New York comic is what he knows. Like, people just do nothing. Those guys have a love for that kind of, like, garage culture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's what wholly makes that series so successful. And it's like, even, like, This Country or The Office, it's like, Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant used to like have worked those jobs.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can tell, because like it's so like kind of minutely picked apart and kind of like put under the microscope, that it's like, if you hadn't been in that world, you wouldn't figure that out. Do you know what I mean? I think like the kind of the pairing of, because the thing is, you look at a photo of Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David next to each other, it's like, one, it doesn't look like those two should be friends, because like one, like, I think it's the fact that Larry David has always looked like he's about 60 years old, but like they kind of, I don't know, and like, and like Jerry Seinfeld is like, he's sardonic and sarcastic, but like he's very like, even the way he speaks, like quite chipper and like peppy. Do you know what I mean? He's up, whereas like Larry David is very much like dour. But it's that kind of yin and yang of those two personalities that kind of like I don't know, swelled up in a pot to make this like amazing. I just think it is like a kind of, it's a once in a lifetime show, like
and it clearly had such a big impact, like as you said, it kind of then spurned on lots of other shows and other this kind of format. The more you talk about it, the more I've got other shows popping up in my head. And I'm like, this probably had some influence on this and that. And the 90s certainly is, it's interesting when you look at eras of comedy, and especially in decades, like the 90s had, like, when you think of 90s comedy, even though, again, I've not watched it, I do think of Seinfeld, Friends, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you know, it has this kind of look and this kind of feel to it, you know, kind of like the live audience, the gang or the family getting up to scrapes in whatever place they're in. I just find that fascinating. And something I talked about with my guest Daisy when we talked about Friends was how it kind of turned people into megastars. Now, I'm aware that Jerry Seinfeld was, again, a successful comic at this point, but I'm imagining this show just took him to another level. Like you said, if he's getting offered 110 million for a season by the end of it, I can't imagine he was being offered that at the start.
Yeah, oh, I guess it's that thing as well that, like, if you kind of look at them, most of them have never really had to work. Do you know what I mean? Like, it seems like they haven't had to work, and it's, but they have chosen to. And it's like, well, yeah, like, no effect, like, to Jason Alexander, but, like, he hasn't really popped up in anything great for a long while. I don't know, I guess
you said that. I'm now looking at his IMDb just to see.
Yeah, and it's that thing, like, so for me, yeah. I it's weird, I can't watch Pretty Woman without, like, and that is a thing I think that is great about like sitcoms is, and I guess it's a death knell for a lot of people as well in their careers, is that people only see them as those characters. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, like, yeah, as I was saying with, like, I think he plays like a really vile guy in Pretty Woman, and it's like, no, George is bad, he's not that bad. Do you know what I mean? He's not that bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, again, that's something we talked about. Yeah, I'm just scrolling through. There's nothing here, really. Well, there's loads of stuff, but yeah, I get what you mean. Not the same notoriety, but yeah, it's true. Because again, talking with Daisy about Friends, it was the same thing. Of obviously, all six of those guys became like household names by the end of the 90s. Same with these main four. And I imagine it becomes really difficult to just not be seen as anything other than, oh, you're Jerry Seinfeld, or, you know, you're George Costanza. Yeah. Like, it's like, no, I'm an actor. So it's that thing of like, I think about this a lot with actors. Where it's obviously you're looking for work, and it's great when you're in a series or something that's doing really well because you're getting recognition, you're obviously getting paid. But I imagine it must be really frustrating coming out of it that you're like, right, I want to do something else. Mm-hmm. And then it's like more doors should be open to you, but they're kind of not. The only doors that would be open, I imagine after this, a lot of them were probably approached for more of the same. More like, hey, do you want to do this sitcom, or do you want to do that? And they're probably like, no, I've just done 9 seasons of this, you know.
Well, yeah, it's really interesting if you watch like King of Queens, because like,
right, yeah, that's another one. Yeah, yeah.
Jerry Stiller is obviously, he plays the dad in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he is basically like a version of his character in Seinfeld, just kind of toned down a bit from what I remember of King of Queens. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Because in Seinfeld, he is like very fiery. Do you know what I mean? He's always like, okay. He's a bit of a madcap character, and I could, like, there are moments in that show, and there's a perfect pairing of him and Michael Richards, like scenes of those two. I sometimes just like stick on like YouTube like sizzle reels of those like scenes of those two, because there's something about them that is just when they're together, like there's an episode, it's going to sound very bizarre, but there's an episode where they're playing pool in a room that is too small for the pool table, and they're both in their pants because, like, for some bizarre reason, that, like, it makes sense in the episode.
Okay.
That they're both just, they're in, like, dress top half, but they're just in their pants and they're playing pool. And it is just like this montage of them trying to make shots and stuff like that. And it's like physical comedy, like just dumb.
Yeah.
It's like just the height difference. Well, you've got this kind of dumpy Jerry Stiller and then a massive Michael Richards. Yeah. Beautiful.
Wonderful. I mean, yeah, again, it's stuff like that is, I think, sometimes just the simple things. You know, it's physical comedy works just as well. I mean, that's something that's a through line in all of the shows I've talked about so far, that there's always someone doing something, you know, whether it's a pratfall or something, or like, you know, it's, and there's nothing wrong with it. It still makes you laugh. It's still brilliant. But yeah, I, again, just the more you're talking about this, the more I'm like, I need to go and watch this now. I need to go. it does sound great.
I guess it's a,
go on.
It's a daunting one to get into because it's that thing that it's like it's held up in such regard. Do you know what I mean? And like I don't know, like to use a weird comparison, it's like, I guess like some, like, because like a lot of the fan base of it can be very dismissive as well. Like is that thing, you're either Team Seinfeld or Team Friends.
There's really,
like, a lot of those people, like you see it a lot, and it'll be like, oh, like, yeah, like scoff at friends and go like, yeah, but it's not a Seinfeld, is it? And like, I at times I hold my hands up. I have been like that, but it's that kind of thing that like, it's like that thing of like, Friends is very much like a blockbuster movie. Do you know what I mean? It's a, it's a kind of like, everyone can like get involved, whereas like Seinfeld kind of almost has this like, because it has got that neurotic edge to it. It's like kind of going, oh, like here's an art house. Do you know what I mean? Here's the art house, and it kind of, I guess to some people, obviously yourself, like it probably just skipped you by. But
yeah,
I kind of get that impression from some people that it's that, because it's like got this worthiness to it and this reverence that some people go, oh, like, oh, maybe I'll just steer clear. Do you know what I mean?
True.
Well, some people just don't. Some people just don't like it, and I totally get that. Like,
Like,
don't like neuroticism and kind of like.
I'll be honest with you as well. I think it's kind of a generational thing as well, because I kind of believe a lot of sitcoms, it used to be what you kind of grew up with on TV. You know, now obviously it's a completely different ballgame because of streaming. So like one episode I did recently, which would probably be out by the time people hear this, was on Scrubs. And I absolutely adore Scrubs because I grew up with it. You know, I was in my teen years when it was on telly and I was just like, oh, this is my show. Same with kind of like the Office, the US Office and the British Office as well. You know, they were kind of out when I could watch them. Whereas stuff like, Friends and Seinfeld, is like I've watched bits of Friends, but never the whole way through. And other shows, because they just weren't on as much, you know. And Seinfeld, like Friends, you'd have more of a chance of watching because it was on British telly a lot more. Whereas Seinfeld, I can't say I've ever seen it just on any channels, which is weird, right? Because we get a lot of stuff like there are endless repeats of Frasier and, you know, Everyone Loves Raymond and like Malcolm in the Middle, Friends.
Yeah.
All those shows are on. Even Fresh Prince is on all the time on UK channels. But I can't say I've ever just been flicking through telly and gone, oh, Seinfeld's on. Yeah, I'll watch an episode. Yeah. So that's probably another reason why I've never seen it, because it's just not been in my sort of periphery, if you will.
From what I know, it originally aired on Channel 4 as well, like on its initial run in the UK. But like I'm very, it's that thing, without somebody who's like an older friend of mine kind of putting me onto the DVDs, like I wouldn't have watched it at the time. Like I would have been 7 when it ended. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it's like, it wasn't like I would have been like no way. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. I don't think I would have got it as well. I don't think I would have got it as a kid. And like, I guess it's that thing. Yeah. Like if I'd seen it as a kid, I might have gone no thanks and never gone back to it. But like, yeah, I'm kind of glad I got into it when I did, and it's just so great. Like there's certain episodes, there's like a made up holiday in the show called Festivus, which is the 23rd of December. I need to double check that. I sometimes for a massive fan, I'm forgetting this, but I'm pretty sure Festivus is the 23rd of December. So it's an alternative holiday to Christmas.
Right.
The slogan is, it's a Festivus for the rest of us. So like every 23rd of December, I get the aluminum pole out of the crawl space.
Right.
And I do the feats of strength and watch the Festivus episode of Seinfeld.
Interesting.
All of that will make perfect sense once you've watched it, and that is a thing. That is a season 9 episode.
Right.
It's called The Strike. That episode.
Okay.
Again, like, and this is like very much like a B plot to it, but like it's kind of permeated the kind of fandom of it and stuff like that. But like, it's one of the best episodes, and that's what I feel like. You know, like some series get to like the final season and the wheels start to fall off, because obviously some of the key players have like dropped out. And
just on that, you're absolutely right, and that is something that we've kind of touched upon already with a couple episodes, and there's some more coming up. I'm looking at you, Community. You know, no offense, but there's other shows like it, US Office to a degree as well, I would say, like where, like you said, one or two key players go, and just the chemistry and the rhythm of the gang just starts to fall apart. And it's, you know, and looking at this, I can see the main four in particular are pretty much consistent throughout. And I think that's I imagine that would have helped the show kind of keep its rhythm going.
With the thing that, like, the one thing that slightly jeopardized the show is, I think it's like the end of season seven, Larry David left. So, one of the kind of like driving forces behind it, but like they managed to like, and I guess like eventually that became the death nail in the show because Jerry then kind of had to take on like the, like more, like had to be more involved because obviously it's like so like panicky about everything and wanted to make sure it was the best show possible.
Yeah.
But obviously like he was acting in it, making sure the writing was like, let's say like writer's room, but like the scripts were perfect.
Yes.
And then like, I think it just got to a point he was burnt out and it is that thing of like,
that's fair enough.
But like, but like they managed to, in those later seasons, there are some episodes that are just like amazing. And I could just list off episodes, but like weirdly to you, if I just say like the wig master, you're gonna be like,
what
the hell was he talking about?
I would love to actually.
No, it's fun.
No, it's cool. I mean, I do like to try and get involved. As I said, there are a couple of other shows coming up, recordings where the same thing, like I've never seen it or something, so it's I'm all up for learning. This is what the whole show is about, me kind of learning, and some episodes on topics I'll jump in with people and other times I'll just kind of sit back and listen because I'm like, well, I don't know anything about this topic, but it's good for me to hear it. And I want to touch on something you said a minute ago, because people know on this show that I try my best to keep things kind of light and inclusive, because I think toxic fandom is one of the worst things in the world. And I put my hand up as well, like you. I've been that guy who's been a bit panicky, being like, oh, you like that one particular version of this thing.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the version that I like. And I apologize to all the people who've known me that I've been that person, because it's stupid. Because on the face of it, like I said, Friends, Seinfeld, it's like, they're both 90s comedies about people living in New York. Like whatever you like, you know, or like them both. There's always the option to have both. If it's comedy, at the end of the day, if it makes you laugh, that's great. If it doesn't, fair enough. If it's not to your sensibilities, just don't watch it. I'm a big believer in that. The more I do the show, I'm like, do you know what, there's no need to put other people down. If they like something, cool. If I don't like it, I can just shut up. That is an option.
I spent nearly 100 episodes of my podcast watching every single Nicolas Cage film, and like kind of my mantra became like, hey, like there's a Nicolas Cage film for everyone. And it's that thing, if people like badmouth him online or whatever, I'm like, hey, that's how you feel about him. Like, but like, It's I probably should be a bit more pushy, maybe more people listen to the podcast, but be like, no, listen to my podcast, we'll find out why it's so great. But like, I totally agree with you on like toxic fat, and like I guess one of those things I hate is like it happens a lot, like I think you say like, oh, I haven't seen The Sopranos, and you get scoffed at that. It's that thing, and it's,
I was laughing actually today, because I was listening to your podcast today, where you were doing the Princess Diaries with Helen O'Hara. I have to say, I'm kind of jealous, because I'd love to get Helen or any of the Empire gang on my show. I'm just going to put that out in the universe. If they're listening, if they hear this, please come on my show. You can have any topic you want. It was lovely. And because I've seen The Princess Diaries, this is a massive tangent, but who cares? I've seen The Princess Diaries and I thought it was fine. My sisters loved it, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And in the podcast I was listening to, you talked about how you haven't seen The Godfather yet. And it did crack me up. I was kind of like, oh, fair enough. You know, I thought, okay, you're doing a couple of podcasts, but you haven't seen it. I kind of like that, though. I like that you're building to it. And it got me thinking after I finished the show. I was like, yeah, there is that thing of people being like, you haven't seen The Godfather. You haven't seen Seinfeld. You haven't. It's like, yeah, okay, chill out. If you haven't, it's fine. And if you watch it and you don't like it, that's also fine. You know,
So too many people don't come at me. I have seen The Godfather. I just...
Oh, okay. Like, all right.
not to a degree that like I can remember. You know, I watched it when I was right. Like,
yeah, you did say it. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
yeah. I watched like, you know, like for me, it's like I haven't watched it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you didn't,
I
it in, yeah.
I didn't take it in. That's fair. All I cared about, all I cared about was people getting shot and stuff like that. Like, right. But like, I haven't said like to that point. I haven't seen The Godfather 2, which I guess for a lot of people would be even more egregious than not having seen the first one.
People throw their phones into the sea. Yeah, no, exactly. it's that thing of, again, coming back to it. You know, with sitcoms, with Seinfeld as an example. Like, I have reverence and respect for it, even though I've never seen it, because I'm like, I understand, and I understand even more now, thanks to you and your insight, that, yeah, this is obviously a huge kind of staple in sitcoms, and you can argue that without it, yeah, maybe we wouldn't be where we are today. Maybe certain shows wouldn't have come along, or if maybe they would have, they would look drastically different from what they do now. And I think that's great. At the very least, I believe anyway, even if you don't like an older thing, you don't have to be rude about it. You can just give it the nod and kind of go like, okay, but without this, we wouldn't have X, Y, Z, you know, or I can just give it a little due respect. And that's great. And at the end of the day, this sitcom, from what you said, it's about people running around in New York and being idiots. There's not too much to, in my opinion, like, I think I play devil's advocate. It's like, there's not too much for you to get overly angry about. You should just enjoy it for what it is. And if other people don't, fair enough.
Yeah. I guess that thing, and it is looking at it as a product of its time.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I guess that thing, if you throw everything under the microscope, nothing is going to be perfect.
We talked about this on Friends Daisy was saying, like, Ross gets a hard time these days because people put him under the kind of modern society lens. And I agree with you. I said the same thing there. I was like, well, I just don't think it's a good idea to do that. Yeah, okay. You can look at it and go, well, that maybe there should have been more representation. There should have been this, should have been that. But like, unless the show is outrightly going out of its way to discriminate against or be abusive towards a certain group of people, I just think you just got to write it off as for what it is.
Yeah.
You know? And that's it was written in the 90s. Okay, it's not an excuse for them to be like outwardly racist or whatever, but if they're not doing that, then I don't see what the harm is.
I won't go too deep into this because I'm aware of time, but there is an episode of Seinfeld that did cause controversy at the time.
Right.
Because I think it's like the penultimate episode, all set around a Puerto Rican day.
Okay.
Like parade. And yeah, like, so there's amazing photos you could see online where it's like people in the streets watching the finale on, you know, like this massive like Times Square like TV screens.
Oh, wow.
Stuff like that. But then also you can see people outside the NBC buildings who are from the Puerto Rican community protesting the show, being like,
right,
Jerry Seinfeld's the devil and stuff like that. And from what I remember of that episode, but then again, I think that's one I haven't seen in a few years, so I don't remember it being a problem. And I remember hearing they just picked a random country and that was it.
And sometimes if it causes offence, again, I don't think you can always just apologise for it. Not to go too much into it, but I know there's a few shows where they had kind of blackface, where they were making fun of blackface and how ridiculous and offensive it is. But they've gone back and taken those scenes out because even though they're satirising it, they were like, do you know what? It's still offending people. It's still got a horrible history. Let's just take it out. And some shows do that. I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think it's PC gone mad. I think it's just, you know, if something is really egregious or really not well thought out, if it's streaming, you can just go in and just take it out. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm all up for watching this show. And I just want to ask, is there anything else you would kind of want to say about it or for people to bear in mind when they're going into it?
I think I've said everything on the points of like going into it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I would just say like, just give it a chance, like give it a go. Like, as I said, it's going to be on Netflix soon enough. Like you're paying your $9.99 a month anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, just do it.
What's the harm? Or and if you really want like someone to do a curated list of episodes or anything like that, please do hit me up. I would love to put together like a here's a top five episodes or I think those episodes start from the beginning, everyone. That's really what I say, because it is that thing of like those episodes hit so much better when you've had like the season arc, and it is one of those shows that kind of started to do season arcs. It wasn't just like the status quo at the end of every episode. So like,
I love that.
There are overarching arcs for whole episodes, like seasons and stuff like that. So yeah, it's great. I love it, guys.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for taking us through that, Petros. I guess all that's really left to say, my friend, is where can the good people find you? We've already touched upon your podcast, but yeah, go ahead, plug away, my friend.
So you can find me on all good and bad social media at Caged In Pod. So that's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and even Letterboxd, where you can kind of get glimpses as to films that are coming up on the podcast, or just stuff that I'm watching in general.
Okay.
So you can kind of have a peek in the mind of who I am. I've got a whole back catalogue of Nick Cage films on the podcast, which you can find again on all good and bad podcast catchers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, at the moment, I'm looking at every single film that has a Coppola connection. So whether that's Francis Ford Coppola or Robert Schwartzman, John Schwartzman, the list goes on. The list is crazy. Yeah, come on over, check it out, and it's a lot of fun. There's been some amazing people that I kind of pinch myself that have managed to that I've managed to speak to, and hopefully there's a lot more. It's super. I have so much fun doing it. So come have a listen.
Brilliant. I'll be putting all the links in for you. I would say, people, it's worth checking out, because I've just sort of dipped my toe in the water of your show, and it is fascinating as a premise. Like you said, I knew they were a fairly big Hollywood family, but I didn't realize just how big, like all the connections. Like I love that. I love something, even if it's something direct, like this, Sofia Coppola, for example, directed this film to a really tenuous one of their cousins wrote on the script of this movie. I love that. I love hearing all of that, kind of history, and like how it all threads together is just fascinating to me.
Yeah, and if anyone is kind of bemused by that idea as well, like I released a kind of a zero episode which kind of explains who all the key players are and who I'll be covering in the family. So it's it's very much for me to get my head around it, because doing the research for that preliminary episode very much gave me the thing of being like, oh, so I've got to watch 300 films. Okay. Yeah, that's how many I've got.
Brilliant stuff. Well, thanks very much, Petros. Thank you for your time, my friend.
Thank you so much.
And there we have it. Thank you so much to Petros for coming onto the show and talking to me about all things Seinfeld. I could not have been happier with how that conversation went. As I said at the start, it was such an eye-opener for me, and I hope it was for you guys listening too. If you have a favourite Seinfeld moment or things that you love about the show, make sure you go and follow me on Twitter and Instagram. We're talking about that as the week goes on, and tag myself and Petros in. We'd love to hear from you. And also, make sure you go and check out Petros' show, Caged In, Coppola Connections. It's so unique. It's unlike any other movie podcast that's out there. It's gone through quite a few changes as he's moved the show along. And he's now at a point where he's got some wonderful guests and films that he's discussing. It's really worth checking out. All of that is in the show notes for you. As well, if you like the look of the logo, the artwork, of course, I must give a big shout out to Alex Jenkins, who designs the artwork for this show and many other shows for previous guests. His details are in the show notes. Go give him a follow. Go reach out to him if you want to commission him for your own artwork. Also, I want to say a big thank you to every single one of you who's been listening to the show so far. We're coming up to a year of Fundamentals, and I'm thrilled with how things have gone so far. It's just been lovely. All the people I've met, the conversations I've had, the people that are tuning in to listen, of course, that being you guys, you really make it. Thank you so much to every single one of you who's been listening, who's been subscribing, who's been telling a friend. And all I can ask is that you keep doing that. If you're liking the show, feel free to reach out to me. Let me know what you think. You can leave a 5-star review on your favourite podcatcher and let me know, which of course earns a shout out on the podcast. And even if you want to become a guest on the show, I still have guest spots open. At the time of recording, I believe I have 2 or 3 spots available for this particular series that I'm doing with sitcoms. However, come September, I'm looking to expand once again into the world of pop culture. So definitely reach out to me if you have a topic or some ideas. I'd love to hear from you. Well, that's enough rambling for me. I'll be back again next week with another guest and another sitcom, and I'll leave a small clip in here for you as a clue. So until next time, stay tuned and stay safe.
Are we going to sit here and do nothing? Or are we going to confront Dave and win back the dignity and snacks we so richly deserve?
You know what we can do? We give him a list of demands like those guys in that movie.
That doesn't work unless you shoot a hostage every hour to let him know you're serious.
I'm not willing to do that.
It's better if we pick one specific issue and not back down. Like Custer, we will make our last stand.
Wasn't Custer massacred?
Big Chief Custer? No. He killed many Paleface that day. I'll tell you what. I'm willing to be the one to lay my ass on the line and go down to Pharaoh's cave and tell him what's what. I only ask that when the time comes, you all stand behind me.
Yes.
Well, I never thought I'd be standing behind you, Bill, but I'm in.
I'm in.
Me too.
Me?
Your show of faith touches me deeply. I swear to you, I will not let you down. I will not rest until the revolution is complete. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a traffic and weather update to do.